We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. My name's Frank Vespi, and first off, we appreciate you spending a little bit of your Saturday morning here with us on Off to the Races on WNST Baltimore Positive as we talk thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. Got a great show lined up here for you. A lot to do, a lot of things going on in the racing world. I'll tell you about that in a minute. First, want to say thanks to a couple of supporters of our show, including the Maryland Horse Breeders Association and Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. Thanks, guys. We appreciate you. But most of all, we appreciate our listeners. Otherwise, I'd just be talking to myself. And what's fun about that? Not much is the answer. So great show lined up for you here today on Off to the Races. We're going to start off, talk a little bit of Maryland. We're going to have John Piazek from the Horse Breeders talking about a really cool event that they and the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association are putting together next April 15th, this April 15th, next Saturday at Laurel Park, called Talking Tessio. Should be a lot of fun there. Going to have Crystal Pickett going to join us, and we'll jump around a little bit. Crystal's the head of the Maryland Steeplechase Association. She's going to tell us about the jump racing meets that are coming up in Maryland. They go through the spring and then pick up with a couple more in the fall. So interesting stuff there, and good connections to the flat racing world as well. So something to learn a little bit more about. Looking forward to that. Later in the day, we're going to talk Triple Crown. Derby Bill Watson, Nick Hahn going to be here. Kelly Francois from the Maryland Jockey Club is going to let us know what's going on at Laurel Park this weekend. And we're also going to have an interview. This is going to come up more towards 10:20 or so, with Eric Hamelback from the National Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association. The HBPA has filed a couple of lawsuits and have successfully gotten the implementation of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act and the Horse Racing Integrity Safety Authority, and particularly their drug rules. The drug rules are enjoined nationwide because of actions the HBPA took. The application of the broader law is enjoined in a couple of states. So kind of a complicated legal situation. Eric Hamelback going to tell us why his group is opposing that law and what is going to come next in that area. So lots of good things that we need to talk about and get caught up on here on Off to the Races. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday with us here. You can keep up with the racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. And you can find us on all the socials at The Racing Biz. So before we go any farther, let's dive right in, shall we? Yes, we shall. Let's bring in John Piazek from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, and let's talk Tessio. Going to be joined here by John Piazek of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. The Horse Breeders, good friends of our program here, Off to the Races, and they've got coming up April 15th, it's the running of the Federico Tessio Stakes at Laurel Park. The Horse Breeders and the MTHA, the Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, co-sponsoring a Tessio Talk event that is open to the public. John, going to give us a little bit of info about this. And John, let's start with this. Who was Federico Tessio, and why is there stake name for him? Why are we celebrating him?
Well, it feels like a lot of people know the name Tessio, but they don't quite know who he was and how big his influence was. He was originally from Italy, born in the 1860s, died in the 1950s. And he is one of the, if not the, preeminent breeder of thoroughbreds in racing history. I mean, his theories and methods are still studied and practiced to this day. He bred, owned, and trained 22 winners of the Italian Derby and had success all over the European continent. Best known for breeding the great champion Reebok, who won the Prix Arc de Triomphe twice, as well as Nyoko, who went on to be the sire of Yotik, who in turn sired Northern Dancer,
who then became the Stallion of Stallions here in the United States. And Tessio had some pretty interesting theories, but one of the things that he said that really has come down to us is that the whole sort of the whole endeavor of breeding a racehorse is predicated essentially on a post. And that post is the winning post, at, you know, in the major races, in the 2000 Guineas or the Arc de Triomphe or the Kentucky Derby or Preakness. And the whole point of the endeavor is to breed champions. And that was what he practiced with great success from a modest group. Now, John, this event coming up at Laurel Park, April 15th in the International Room, 10:30 a.m., who's going to be participating in this panel?
It's a great group of speakers. We have Ned Moore, who owns a farm down in Virginia, also does a lot of bloodstock work. We have Billy Boniface, best known as the breeder of Deputed Testimony, the last Maryland bred to date win the Preakness, who did so in 1983. And Josh Pond from Country Life Farm is also going to be there. So it's going to be a great group of speakers and a lot of interesting discussions for sure.
It definitely should be. I have the either good or misfortune, hard to tell which, and hard to see what the public will think about that, of being the moderator of this panel. I'm looking forward to it because I will learn a lot. I think it's going to be really interesting what they have to say. And you know, three gentlemen who have had a lot of success in this industry and been in this industry for a long time. So a lot of combined knowledge there. John, how can the public, if somebody hears this and says, geez, I want to go, this sounds really interesting, what do they need to do?
Tickets are free. Go to MarylandThoroughbred.com, and we have a link on the homepage to RSVP through Eventbrite. So far, we've had a pretty good amount of RSVPs, hoping to have a big crowd this Saturday.
MarylandThoroughbred.com is the website. The Tessio Talk, April 15th at Laurel Park. Free to come to, so please do join us at Laurel for this conversation about the great Federico Tessio. John, you looking forward to the Tessio Stakes?
I cannot wait. It's going to be another showdown between Coffee with Chris and Prince of Jericho, who have been doing very good work all winter long. And interestingly, later today at Keeneland, we'll have Hayes Strike, who beat Coffee with Chris in the private terms. He's back in action in the Bluegrass. So if Hayes Strike wins, it could well boost the stock of Coffee with Chris ahead of next week's race. Should have a few Triple Crown nominees in that field, including Coffee with Chris, a late nomination. And it would not be surprising to see the test to produce a Preakness starter or two.
All right, sounds good. Talking Tessio, event investigating the life and breeding methods of the great Federico Tessio, coming up April 15th at Laurel Park, 10:30 a.m. You can go there, check that out, and stick around for the races, including the Federico Tessio Stakes, to learn more and get free tickets. MarylandThoroughbred.com is the website. John Piazzik of the Maryland Horse Breeders, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure, Frank.
Let's switch gears here from arguably the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time. Let's talk now about the horses that go over jumps, Maryland steeplechase season. Okay, joined now on Off to the Races by Crystal Pickett, but not the one who trains horses at Charlestown. This one, excuse me, is president of the Maryland Steeplechase Association. And Crystal, welcome to the program. Give us an overview of the season. We're just sort of at the onset of the Maryland spring steeplechase season. What are we looking at here?
Well, we are well underway. Horses are on the course, as they say. I can back up. Horses are off. So the horses are off. The season officially started with the Green Spring Point to Point, which was last weekend. We had an unofficial start to the season at the end of March, on March 19th, with a what's called a team chase. And that's the first time that many of the steeplechase horses kind of go out in a semi-competitive day. They've been legging up all winter. Some of them are fox hunting. And so they go out this March 19th, in the middle of March, and they do this thing we call a team chase, which is a steeplechase in groups with fast teams and average time teams. And that's their first warm-up. And then last week was the Green Spring Valley point-to-point. And that's the first official race of the season.
And Saturday we have the Elkridge-Harford point-to-point. How late does the spring season go, Crystal?
Spring season runs through May. This year, the spring season ends with the Potomac races. And the Potomac races are on, sorry for the delay. The Potomac races are on Sunday, May 21st. Some years the season goes through Memorial Day weekend if Fair Hill is doing a race meet, but this year Fair Hill is not doing a race meet.
Okay, and then you also come back for a couple of meetings in the fall, right, in September and October.
Correct.
A couple more.
Correct. We have the Legacy Chase at Shawan Downs in September and the Cattail Chase in October. The Maryland Steeplechase Association offers a series. We're not a rulemaking body like the National Steeplechase Association. We are an umbrella organization for all the race meets in Maryland, all the jump meets in Maryland. Whether they run under the rules of the National Steeplechase Association or whether they're the informal point-to-points, they all band together to do this series called the Governor's Cup Series, which is presented by our sponsor, Horizon Farm Credit. And at the end of the season, they are awarded cash bonuses and perpetual trophies and that sort of thing. So for the series, it officially begins with a Legacy Chase in September and then concludes in the spring. But in Maryland, because of our Big Three Timbers, which is My Lady's Manor, the Grand National, and the Hunt Cup, it's springtime is where the main action is in Maryland.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned the Maryland Hunt Cup and doing a little reading on it, and it is widely considered one of, if not the toughest steeplechase race in the world. What makes the Hunt Cup so tough?
It's length, four mile length, the height of the fences. Horses have to have speed and endurance in order to do it. And everything in Maryland is really a preparation for the Hunt Cup. Even though it's not the end of the season per se, we still have other races and we have the racing year round. The Maryland Hunt Cup is the big daddy of them all in the world. There's more eyes on the Maryland Hunt Cup internationally probably than there is nationally.
The Hunt Cup taking place April 29th this year, so fairly late in the season, but still a few weeks from the end of it. Crystal, one of the things that I think is sort of intriguing, especially for, you know, we do a lot of stuff with flat racing, but wanted to bring in some of the other horse disciplines as well. But there's a lot of kind of crossover between flat horses and flat horsemen and women and those that do the jump racing. And I wonder if you could talk about kind of that interchange between these disciplines.
Well, obviously Maryland is, the thoroughbred is the Maryland state horse, right? Maryland has been breeding thoroughbred horses since colonial days. We've been racing horses and we've been fox chasing since we were a colony. And so we are a cradle of thoroughbred breeding and racing in Maryland. And in some families, we've got families that date back centuries doing this in Maryland. And they are involved with fox chasing as well. So while they may be breeding primarily for the flat track, because that is an industry, that's a business, it's where the money is. These are sportsmen. They love their horses. they do other things with their horses. Many of them fox chase. Many of them show. And when the horses don't, when the flat track is not the most suitable career for these horses, quite often the next step is steeplechasing.
And it takes a while to turn a horse, a flat horse, into a good steeplechase horse if he's able, he or she is able to become one, right? I mean, it calls on sort of different skills and different kind of muscle sets even, does it not?
Absolutely, absolutely. When they first take the horses off the flat track, they may give them some time to get adjusted. They might turn them out and let them let down from the track. And presuming that they're sound, the trainers will bring them back along. Usually, they start, you know, these are the flat track horses have been on the flat. So these are horses that need to get used to rolling terrain, and they'll start by schooling them on open rolling terrain and then entering them into flat races that are held at the steeplechases, see how they go. Horses are often first schooled over, when they start schooling them over jumps, they'll often start with the hurdles to see how they do with the hurdles. Horses jump a little bit more flat. It's okay if they, because they brush their legs through they're called brush jumps. And today they're sometimes they're natural jumps, sometimes they're an artificial brush. But they can jump a little bit flatter. They can jump in stride. So when you're bringing a horse from being a flat horse to being a jump horse, that's often a first step to see how they do over that. And of course, then if they do well over the hurdles, then often trainers will go that direction. Why? Because there are bigger purses in the hurdles. However, if they're a Maryland trainer, where they really want to go is to the Maryland Hunt Cup. And so if they've got a jump horse, generally, and they're a Marylander, generally they're going to try to convert that horse to going over the sticks, as we like to say, and running that horse over timber fences so that they can get to the Hunt Cup, because that's where our heart is.
That's where the heart is. Home is where the heart is, unless the heart's at the Hunt Cup. All right, Crystal Pickett, I can vouch having attended. Yeah, that was good, right? I can vouch having attended steeplechase races a couple of times. It's a good time. You have a nice day out in the country and see some horses going over the sticks, and it can be a lot of fun. If people want to learn more, they want to learn how to get tickets and stuff, what's the website that you guys maintain that they can get to learn more?
It's really easy. Go to MarylandSteeplechasing.com.
All right, Crystal Pickett, president of the Maryland Steeplechase Association. The website is MarylandSteeplechasing.com. We got racing over the sticks, as she just said, April 8th, April 15th, pretty much all through April and May, and then picking up again in the fall. Crystal Pickett, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Frank.
You're listening to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com.
Joined by Eric Hamelback now on Off to the Races. Eric is head of the National Horsemen's Benevolent Protective Association, the HBPA, the largest group representing owners and trainers in the country, and a group that has been leading the efforts with some notable success to kind of turn back the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. Most recently on March 31st, just 4 days after HISA, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority's rules regarding drugs, their anti-doping and medication control program, went into effect on March 31st, a federal judge in Texas put those rules on hold for 30 days because of violations of the Administrative Procedures Act. Eric, what happens next?
Frank, well, thanks for having me on. We do appreciate the opportunity to talk about the cases and really explain the why that I think people often miss. So if first you'd let me go back just a little bit, I try to always open up with a bit of a short summary as to why we're doing this. It is not to push back even against HISA or the authority. We have been very clear that our due diligence to the industry was to make sure this act was written on solid ground, was written in a constitutional fashion. And I would go back all the way to 2015 when H.R. 3084 was introduced, the predecessor to HISA that we have now. We were told by the Congressional Research Service that this bill was likely unconstitutional. So for us, it's about protection. It isn't necessarily, as you described, to turn back the authority or HISA. Again, we often state, and I've stated very recently, there are plenty of the regulations that are being requested or mandated from HISA that we as an organization and all horsemen agree with. But at the end of the day, the regulations, if built on a bill that's unconstitutional, it's not going to help the industry. So for us, where we go from here is anticipated because of the split decisions, and I'll go a little bit deeper into case one and case two, the split decisions in the appellate courts that differ. The appellate court in the Fifth Circuit declared HISA unconstitutional, and then in the Sixth Circuit, what we call case two, it was declared constitutional after the amendment that was raised and inserted into the omnibus package from Senator McConnell. So we expect that this is going to eventually end up in the higher courts, all the way to the Supreme Court. But, you know, it is in an effort to make sure we're doing what's right for the industry. With regard to the ADMC program, I think that was the Anti-Doping and Medication Control Program. I think that was very premature. I think that the authority made a mistake in trying to insert this program before the litigations have been resolved. And I actually point to the FTC's own order back at the end of last year when the FTC disapproved the very regulations that they then approved, I believe March 3rd, in their own order. Frank, they said very specifically that due to the fact that the ADMC, the Anti-Doping and Medication Control Program, could not provide uniformity. Why is that? Because there is case three. Case three also built very similarly to the Administrative Procedures Act issue, has two states enjoined from HISA's rules, that being West Virginia and Louisiana. With that, you know, the charge of the act is to develop uniformity, and realistically, it can't because there isn't an enjoinment of those two states. And then they also stated in that very same order that they were going to stand down until the litigation and the constitutionality challenges were resolved. So fast forward to the beginning of March, none of that's changed. If anything, it's more complicated than it was back at the end of the year. So for us, we asked, and various members, actually quite a few members of Congress, both House and Senate side, asked the FTC not to proceed with approval, and it was just bad timing for the industry. And that subsequently proved to be true because at the end of the day, I don't know what they were thinking by approving something and then trying to initiate it on the very same day. Frank, that's elementary as far as I was concerned in the FTC rules, and they did it anyway. Why was that? I'm not going to speculate, but it was wrong. It was wrong for horsemen. You know, we've heard some some, you know, concerning stories that have come about from folks just walking away from testing barns when the ruling came down. You know, that's not in the best interest of the industry, and certainly not in the best interest of the horse. So for us, that proved to be somewhat of an arrogant move on the side of the authority that initiated the rules with the anticipation and expectation that they would just seamlessly start the same day the FTC approved them. And that proved to be a very costly mistake.
Now, Eric, the Fifth Circuit, which you mentioned a moment ago, which has enjoined the application of HISA in West Virginia and Louisiana, they ruled essentially that HISA represented an unconstitutional delegation of quintessentially federal power to a private entity without sufficient federal oversight. Congress, as you mentioned, came back and amended the rule to give the FTC greater oversight. Why do you think that doesn't resolve the constitutional infirmities?
Mainly, Frank, because there are several different aspects of constitutionality that are being challenged. Again, when you look at the Administrative Procedures Act, which I'll jump way ahead and talk or just mention case four, there are different areas, if you want to call it that, of unconstitutionality. The issue with the FTC, and again, depending on how you interpret this amendment, we don't necessarily think that the change is there for the FTC to have any more substantial oversight than they did before. As a matter of fact, if you look at the FTC's own order, and you can go to footnote 2, which begins on page 1, the FTC literally mentions in the footnote that they have no power to have any change of any proposed rules. And it's stated in black and white. So again, they're saying when they approve the rules, even if they didn't like them, they couldn't change them. Now, at some point when they're in play, when they've been approved, when they're being enacted, if someone in the FTC has a light turned on and says, oh, hey, I want to change this from a may to a shall, then it appears they could do that. But it's very clear to at least those of us who are in the weeds on the subject that it doesn't give the FTC the power, so to speak, that some people want to believe that it does.
Talking with Eric Hamill back in the National HPPA, and not too much time left here, Eric, but I did want to ask you, the very sort of special treatment of Lasix in the underlying law, you know, which allows it, but not for two-year-olds, not for stakes horses for 3 years, and then sort of seven magical things have to happen or Lasix is prohibited. That kind of tells you that that was an important thing that the Jockey Club and others who were pushing the legislation at the time wanted to accomplish. They wanted to get rid of Lasix. How important is it to you and your membership, you know, in terms of your legal actions here on HISA? How important is trying to keep Lasix to what you guys are doing?
So, Frank, I take a little bit of a peel back even from just Lasix, okay? I'm going to address Lasix, but in an overall picture of equine health and welfare. I think that depending on which side of the camp you're on, veterinary science and research proves that Lasix is beneficial to mitigate EIPH, right? It doesn't necessarily, well, it doesn't resolve it completely, but if it doesn't eradicate it from a particular horse, it can certainly lessen the severity in other horses. So Lasix has proven not to be performance enhancing. It's been certainly proven to be performance enabling. Horses don't move up 3-4 classes just by getting administration of Lasix. But also, when you look at what has come down now with the ADMC, again, the Anti-Doping and Medication Control Program, a 48-hour stand-down, we call it a RET, 48-hour RAT, restricted administration time. That's not science-based, okay? At the end of the day, science provides for research that ties in a pharmacological effect of a medication. Obviously, we don't have the science back every medication or illicit drug that may be out there, but when you start just blanket making rules that don't have any basis in veterinary science and research, we think that's a problem. And for the most part, many of the current anti-doping and medication control program regulations lean towards what we call limit of detection. You know, there's been a lot of talk about detection times and screening limits and doing away with withdrawal times and thresholds. All of that leans towards, in a layman, which I am, a layman's version of limit of detection. So if it's in the system, chances are it's going to be called an adverse analytical finding and you're going to get a positive test. It doesn't mean that there aren't some screening limits that will be, as I would call them, the floor that will be recognized. And I think if you look at some of the IFHA screening limits, they're fairly similar to what we have now. But for the most part, when you just say you've got to cut everything off at 48 hours, it doesn't matter how it is or is not effective in the horse, that's not based in science. So I would tie that in addition to the concerns about eradicating Lasix just because.
All right. There's so much more on this topic to get into, but we are going to be out of time right now. Eric Hamill back in the National HPPA. Thank you very much for joining us and helping us to get a little bit better handle on where things stand with his.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Frank. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks to Eric Hamelback of the National HPPA for helping us try to make some sense of what's going on with the National Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority. Time to switch gears. Still to come towards the end of today's show, Maryland Jockey Club racing analyst Callie Francois will join to catch us up on goings-on at Laurel Park this weekend. But first, let's talk Triple Crown Trail. Derby Bill Watson and Nick Hahn going to join me in a moment to handicap three key races on the Derby Trail this week: the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland, the Santa Anita Derby, and the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct. But first, last week's big winners, Forte, who ran down Mage to win the Florida Derby and stamp himself the conclusive Kentucky Derby favorite. Here's trainer Todd Pletcher, audio provided by Gulfstream Park.
When he kind of came by where I was sitting in the grandstand at the eighth pole, he still had a lot to do. So at that point, I was kind of thinking, man, you know, hopefully he can get up for second here. And then all of a sudden, he kind of like dropped down. You could visually see him lower down and start extending. And, you know, to think when he came by me at the eighth pole that he's going to win by length, I would have thought that was impossible at that point. You know, the one thing we learned in the Florida Derby is he handled the mile and an eighth really well. The best part of the race for him was the last 16th of a mile, which, you know, gives you confidence that the added distance won't be an issue. He was on his toes after the race, which he normally is, just like he is kind of in the walking ring beforehand. But, you know, it showed that he still had some good energy left after the race. But, you know, we'll learn a lot more about that as we kind of train this week.
The other big winner on the weekend was the Pennsylvania bred Angel of Empire, who won the Arkansas Derby. Here's co-owner Jason Louch, audio provided by Jenny Reese on behalf of the Kentucky HBPA.
It's just really gratifying when you can win a Grade 1, especially the Arkansas Derby. It's a race we've been looking, pointing at for a long time, and to win it, it's just really special.
So what kind of confidence were you going to Louisville with?
You know, after seeing that race, I got a lot of confidence. It's a horse that I've been saying since day one, wants to get the distance. He shows it. He showed twice now to mile and eighth. He just keeps running, and I just thought he ran a great race today, and I'm excited for the first Saturday of May.
And you had a horse that finished third.
Yeah,
Cyclone Mischief in the
I'm so excited for Dale Romans, and to get him in the Kentucky Derby is great. We got third last week in the Louisiana Derby. To have three potential stars in the Derby, it's a dream come true. I feel like I just can't hardly believe it. This is I'm so thankful for my father-in-law that he believed in us and got us to this point.
Turn our attention to today's races, the Saturday 3 100-point preps, and let's start in Kentucky at Keeneland Racecourse, where they're going to run the The grade $1 million Toyota Bluegrass Stakes, mile and an eighth on the main track. And a horse that Nick mentioned a moment ago is the favorite there. That is Tappet Trice, 5-2 on the morning line for trainer Todd Pletcher and jockey Louis Saez. Nick, why don't we start with you? Does Tappet Trice get it done here?
I don't see why not. This is a horse that has won his last two starts. We'll see a little bit more. We'll know a little bit more about how Keeneland is running by the time this race goes off at 5:15. It's a deep field. I think there's some worthy challengers here. This is a horse. It's going to be a little bit interesting because he drew the rail, and that's not really been advantageous for him in terms of his running style. He did actually win off the rail in one of his starts. So, just kind of beat a 12, in the Tampa Bay Derby, had a 12-horse field. There are some interesting characters in this field. One of them is Hay Strike. This is a horse that won the private terms at Laurel, and Ken McPeak is going to take this horse out to Kentucky and give him a shot here, one of three McPeak horses in this race. He also has Mendelssohn in this group as well, and Sun Thunder. So McPeak with three in this field. The Dwayne Lucas horse, this is a horse coming off of two wins. Wouldn't it be neat to see the coach, the Gary Player of trainers, win with Major Blue and get into the Derby field. So going to be kind of watching these horses. But, yeah, I think Tappet Trice is the horse to really contend with here. Wouldn't be surprised by a beat, though. And there are a number of other horses like Raise Kane and Blazing Sevens, who now gets Arad Ortiz aboard. There are a number of notable challengers here.
All right, what do you think about that Derby, Bill? Is it Tappet Trice, or is it one of the other major contenders?
Well, I'm hoping the Bluegrass gets to all of them. My horse called Raise Kane did very nicely last year at Keeneland as a two-year-old and won a race, and the rest of the field has not seen much of the Burgo capital of the world. So I'm going to try Raise Kane. I'm going to try to raise some Kane, and that's usually coming out of the Gotham from the outside here. He's ran in the mud at the Gotham, and so he should, unless it storms again Saturday. It's been a stormy year for everybody. Stormy.
So he won the Gotham like a good thing there. I'm curious, Bill, do you think that was because he's getting really good now, or do you think that was just he just kind of caught a soft field?
No, he's actually the son of Violence, and Violence has the connection with Forte there. So the breeding is to handle this situation well. Joel knows what he's doing. He's been to Keeneland a million times, so the mud was the only thing that threw me off, but, and calculate how good he was in the mud at, in the Gotham. But before then, he ran really, really well, seven furlongs at Keeneland. So I'm relying on some familiarity with the Burgo capital. Obviously, Tappet Trace, as Todd Pletcher, has won this race several times. The Tampa Bay Derby was on that soft sand down there. So, hoping for a real hard surface and some value out of the race with Raise Kane and even a horse called Sun Thunder. 10-1, the Risen Star runner up there gets Florent Nauru. He's got a big chance if you want to add some value to this race, which is it's easily done if you can beat Tappet Trice. I think Tappet goes off even money. That's a favorite with Pletcher money, but it's a, rather large field. So Classic Car Wash comes out of the Tampa Bay too. So there's another 10-1. So you got a couple. Yeah, you got some value in the exotics here, but like last week, Forte took him to the cleaner. So you might have to go underneath Tappet Trice here if you can't beat him with somebody like Raising Kane.
I think Sun Thunder is a pretty interesting play here, Bill, because
there was no pace in a Louis, in his last race, which was the Louisiana Derby. There, he had no shot to close into that because they were walking in front, and then Kings Barnes drew away. If he catches a little pace here, he might come running late. What do you think?
Yeah, he definitely ran his lungs out at the Risen Star at the Fairgrounds for Ken McPeak, just flying late. And I think that's very, very possible here if some of these horses aren't familiar with Keeneland surface. You know, it definitely, I think you can close at Keeneland. So it has in the past been able and then had the ability to pass there. So in 10-1 Sun Thunder, I agree with you, Frank Vespi, for maybe the first time.
All right. Well, there is a first for everything. All right. Let's head out west here for the post time on the bluegrass. I got 5:15 post time for the Santa Anita Derby, 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific out at Santa Anita Park. And perhaps a couple interesting horses here. Bill, why don't we start with you? Obviously, this race kind of runs through Practical Move, who's won his last two, including the San Felipe. What do you think about this race?
Yeah, that was impressive. Practical Move, just a real classy colt. San Felipe was impressed me. I mean, tremendously. National Treasure is out of Quality Road, which, so you know he can go forever and ever here. And he's grade two placed, so I mean, twice grade two placed. So the top two in this race are going to be a humdinger to try to beat. It's like trying to beat Bob Baffert in California. It doesn't happen often. And Practical Move, Nick has him in his top picks for the Derby. I agree with him. That horse is capable of winning the Kentucky Derby. Horse called Skinner's in this race. I like him. There's another one, but he's no odds. You know, 4-1, late runner here from John Sheriff. Had Victor Espinosa under him in the Felipe. But he's a son of Curlin, so you know he can get the distance. So the top three here look pretty chalky to me, Frank.
You mentioned National Treasure. He's kind of an interesting horse because he was with Bob Baffert for the first four starts of his career, and as a result of that has no Derby points. He's going to need a big effort in this race to get enough points to face the starter in Kentucky now that he's in Tim Yachtin's barn. Nick, what about you? Where are you? Bill sees a chance for some value in the bluegrass, maybe not so much here in the Santa Anita Derby. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, there's some interesting horses here. By the way, 62 degrees, partly cloudy in Lexington for the bluegrass. 75 degrees, mostly sunny at Santa Anita, as you would expect for the Santa Anita Derby. Practical Move is the one to really kind of look at. There's an interesting horse here. I was just trying to look him up a little bit while you were talking to Bill. Mandarin Hero is a horse that's making his first start in America in the Santa Anita Derby, coming off of two stakes races in Japan. And so I would think maybe even a third place finish might be good enough for him to generate enough points to get into the Kentucky Derby field this year. It's a field of nine. You know, some of the races in the past at Santa Anita haven't had the full fields, but that San Felipe really proved to be a challenging race for a Practical Move. But I'm really kind of interested about this horse coming over, a Shanghai Bobby horse coming over from Japan. And that's the one, if to me, I think that's the best chance of an upset. Not really all that impressed with Go Rocket Ride. Flavian Pratt ran second with this horse to Practical Move, but was never really a strong challenge. And I don't expect that horse to move up that much that fast. So you have the DeSormos together with Dazzle Me Silver. But I think if there's a horse that wins this race, it might be Mandarin Hero. I'm really intrigued to see because he's been in some deep fields in Japan. And for once, you might be impressed with racing overseas
you know, having an impact in the Kentucky Derby. Some of these Japan runners might have a bigger impact. I'm not going to say they're going to win. I'm not even going to put them in the money, but I think that at least from that standpoint, they're going to be better than they have been in recent years. That's not saying much.
And isn't this an interesting move to bring the horse over here now and get a start in the United States under his belt? I find that very interesting because, you know, we've seen a lot of horses over the years, for example, you know, prep in the UAE Derby and then come here and not show a lot. I think it's really interesting for this horse to show up early, get a race in California, and then have a much easier ship to Kentucky. They've already dealt with the quarantine. They've already dealt with, you know, coming across the Pacific. So this horse, if this horse runs well and accrues the points to run in the Derby, he may be in a good position to make some noise because of this kind of preparation, it seems to me.
All right, let's head back. Keeping everybody intact, too, keeping everybody together, you know, not changing the jockey, not switching trainers. You know, they're coming together as a team and coming over as a team. Very, very interesting situation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. So let's head back east, the Big A, the Grade 2 Wood Memorial, $750,000, mile and an eighth, 616 estimated first post. And you got some real long, if you liked any of these long shots, you got some real long shots here, but is it going to go through one of them, or are we looking at Hit Show, who's the 5-2 morning line favorite for Brad Cox and Manny Franco? Nick, let's start with you.
Yeah, it's hard to decipher through this field. As I started going through, I was like, is there a horse in this field that won their last race? And I got deep into the second page before I found Uncle Jake with Heavy on Toledo there with Brittany Russell coming up from Laurel. Yeah, won a race at Laurel. Classic Catch with Trevor McCartney with Todd Pletcher. And then you got Hit Show. Hit Show on the outside coming into this with the Withers winner. A pretty impressive winner here. I'm going to have to go with Candy Ride's son here, Hit Show, coming from the outside. Manuel Franco, you know, he was MVP of the charity basketball game up at Saratoga last summer. That's good enough for me from a talent standpoint, from a jockey. If you can make those kind of shots, you know, yeah, you're gonna get some hits. So anyway, I don't know. Hit Show is I think the horse to beat here. And another horse that we were kind of looking forward to in that Tampa Bay Derby was Lord Miles, but Peter Begso's horse, who we had on the show that day, just didn't run all that well. Going to come back. So yeah, this is absolutely a redemption race for a lot of horses trying to get back into the Kentucky Derby field, but they're going to have to go through Hit Show to do it.
Yeah, a lot of horses here with no Derby points or only a couple who will need to do something. In fact, Hit Show needs to do something. He's only got 20 Derby points. He won an allowance before he won the Withers. So everybody in here pretty much looking to make some noise and climb into the Derby fray. Bill, what do you say?
Well, Hit Show's won 3 out of 4 and has done nothing wrong. He's run Keeneland, Churchill, Oaklawn. He's been everywhere. And he had a big win at Aqueduct in his preparation for this. So it's hard to go against him, but, you know, I'm not going to go with him. So I'm going to go against anything in New York. and keeping on the Japanese theme here, I'm going to use the name Shadow Dragon. Dragon Monster. Number 2, Eric Cancel gets this ride after Mr. Ortiz jumps on the one horse, Dreamlike here. And then Dreamlike won a couple finished second. No maiden yet. He hadn't broke a maiden yet, and he's 7-2, which I didn't understand. Him making that hop, as Shadow Dragon's capable of going pretty much the distance here, mile and an eighth, William Mott knows what he's doing with the distance horses. You know that. And 12 to 1, I love them odds. And he can keep an eye on Dreamlike down under in the inside. The outside is quite a festival there. This race is going to pay a bunch, I think. This is the biggest race out of all three of the prep races. I like Crumpy, the 9 horse, a little bit. Can't, because I want to say the jockey's name 3 times. Carmenouche. Kindred for Todd Pletcher. I always like saying his name when he's in racing. When I saw him in a race, Carmenouche, he's done nothing wrong. He's been in the money just about every race except the last one, the Ribbon Star. I'll give him a boot there. He ran behind Slip Mahoney and Classic Catch, which is a yeah, and Pletcher's got him a nice horse there. I think that's Rapole Stable too. That's another one of them healthy drinks Derby Bell doesn't, you know, Forte a lot. But, you know, with Forte and Crumpy and all these horses, I'm going to have to start drinking some Body Armor drinks with my bourbon. So, yeah, Crumpy, Hit Show, obviously, is in there. And if you want a superfecta, I like a bomb here. Mr. Swagger. This is, I believe, number 12 here. Just
30 to 1.
Yeah, unplaced in the Gotham, didn't like the mud, obviously. He's the son of McLean's Music and a big $250,000 purchase. And I think he's, if he runs like his maiden race at Aqueduct where he won at 6.5, I think he can, you know, stun the world. You know, you've been stunned before in some of these big Derby prep races, and that would be, 30 to 1, I think he is, morning line.
Yeah, 30 to 1 for Juan Carlos Avila and Carlos Olivero in the irons. So, yeah, that would shock the world. You get that horse home, Bill, you're going to need a wheelbarrow to get your money home.
I can arrange that. I have friends in New York. Not many.
And they have wheelbarrows.
Not many I can speak on the radio about, but I have friends up there.
We completely understand. All right, so that's it. Those are the three big Derby preps on the agenda for Saturday racing around the country. One last one after that coming up the following week, the 15th, that's the Lexington, which is also the same day as the Federico Tessio Stakes at Pimlico, the last local prep for the Preakness. Final thoughts, Derby Bill.
Thanks, UConn, for sporting me a voucher to play this weekend.
That's a beautiful thing. How about you, Nick?
Ruppo Rocks going for 5 in a row in a stakes race at Aqueduct in the Carter. Of course, Virginia bred that has gotten life as a 5-year-old with Jamie Ness going for 5 in a row. Watch out. That, while you're waiting for the wood, take a look at the Carter.
Yep, Jamie Ness and Andrew Wolfson in the irons. Ruppo Rocks in the Carter should be a lot of fun. All right, Nick Hahn, Derby Bill Watson, as always, thank you so much, and good luck at the windows.
Yeah, cash them and don't trash them.
Going to welcome in Callie Francois here, the racing analyst for the Maryland Jockey Club. And Callie, another racing weekend upon us here. And interesting thing Friday, I thought, was to see the return of Maryland Million Turf winner Wicked Prankster, but on the dirt. What'd you make of that?
I just take that as needing a race. Just get the horse out there, get a race underneath him to get things going before his time to shine starts, which is the turf, which will be starting on Thursday.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Sammy Davis, the owner trainer, brought that horse last year off a layoff, ran him a week before the Maryland Million, then turned around and won the Maryland Million. Excuse me, said at the time that was the plan. He needed to work a week out. There was a race, so he ran the race. I wonder if it's kind of the same thing here.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he just gave the horse a winner off, and I'm not looking too much into it. I mean, if he runs well and then he goes ahead and wins something, that's fine. But I'm not putting too much stock in it until I see him actually entered in something bigger. So I just take it as putting him on the turf, giving him a race, and going on from there.
All right. That's Wicked Prankster, last year's Maryland Million Turf winner, returned on Friday at Laurel, finishing fairly well beaten after running up close to the pace in a second level allowance early. Let's look at Saturday's racing for a moment, Callie. And in particular, I want to get your take on this featured eighth race. It's a open allowance going a mile and 16th, $70,000 purse, and some pretty good horses showing up here, including Maryland Million Classic winner, Our Nation on Parade, Zabracadabra, American Patrol, American Doro, stakes winner Vance Scholars. A pretty interesting group of horses.
These horses kind of keep lining up a little bit amongst each other, so it's not too surprising. It's just a decent field. It's a nice prep up for some stakes action that we'll have coming on in the time to come. But Zabracadabra is going to be your 9-to-5 favorite, and there's no mistaking why. And we are also getting Gary Capuano first off the layoff, which as of recently, a barn trend of 31% as of that. Our Nation on Parade has just kind of been running super well, but has just been getting a little unlucky. Looks good in this field. I see a good result. I also like this post for him, the 5 going on 2 turns. I'm not exactly afraid of him being in the 5 post. American Patrol with the blinkers on, I need to be convinced. With American D'Oro, he needs to kind of get his confidence back. So what they did, he really lost his confidence in the Dickie Small Stakes, and then they tried bringing him from off of the pace. It didn't happen until that win going a one-turn mile on the mud in that allowance. Then they tried for the one-turn in the Harris New Johnson. Again, he was put up there a little bit, and he had wanted no part of it. So he might – it depends if the connections are going to do the right by him and just sit from off of the pace. Vamp Scholars, I don't have an excuse for what happened last time out. I really want to see that winning Vamp Scholars back. I'm a personal fan of the horse. Ain't the Beer Cold. This race sets up perfectly for Ain't the Beer Cold. On the inside, going 2 turns here in the mile and 16th, a really advantageous get-go. So I'm really curious to see what I'm going to be seeing here. Angel Cruz stays on. He needs to put that same type of setup in the Robert T. Mancuso. That's what I need to see. Think I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up because he ran really well in that optional 55 last time out.
Yeah, and he loves this mile distance. He's been in the or a mile and a 16th here. He's been in the money 10 of 11 times. So this is what he wants to do. How do you see them approaching it with Ain't the Beer Cold? Do you think they go or are they trying?
Oh, it's their lead. Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
That's an easy one, huh?
Yes.
So you think he runs big here, but obviously Zabracadabra – probably the horse to
be. Absolutely the horse to be.
All right. Callie Francois, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to catch us up to speed on what's going on at Laurel Park this weekend.
Frank, always a pleasure and a good look out there, everybody.
That'll do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday with us. Thanks to our show's supporters, including the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, and many others. Thanks to our guests on this week's show, which featured Eric Hamelback, John Piazza, Crystal Pickett, Derby Bill Watson, and Nick Hahn, and Callie Francois. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next week at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice from Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.